First to the growing stories of disturbance in various parts of the Middle East, with a bit of a different edge, these, because they seem very much focused from within, with real protests against living conditions. In Lebanon, for instance, it was a new tax on WhatsApp. In Iraq, lack of jobs and high food prices is causing very sharp protests, as you probably heard on the news. And in Iran, a relatively small rise in fuel prices brought angry protesters out onto their streets in many, many thousands. In mid-November, the Iranian government raised the price of fuel from 9 US cents a litre to 13 US cents without any warning. Now, it might not sound large, but it was enough to galvanise existing anger against the government of President Rouhani into huge protests. The regime reacted badly. It ordered Iran's Revolutionary Guards to fire live ammunition onto the protesters. It shut down the internet for 10 days, forcing a news blackout, so there's quite a lot that we still don't know. Well, this week, Iran's leaders tried to dial back on some of their actions, but with news reports of as many as 400 people killed in the streets, and much more as well in terms of violence, it's hard to see how life can return to what it was. Alex Fatanker is a senior fellow at the Middle East Institute specialising in Iranian domestic and regional politics. And he joins me now on the phone from Washington, D.C. Alex, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
I mean, clearly, we can discern the protests on the streets of Iran were huge and chaotic. It can't just be because of a price rise in fuel, can it? What is driving them at a deeper level?
You know, we can answer that question on so many different levels. I can, you know, try and give you a historical sort of context of an answer. The first set of protests against the Islamic Republic began within a month after Ayatollah Khomeini took over back in early 1979. And one could make the argument that this anger has been building up for the last 40 years. But without going to, you know, trying to explain the last 40 years in the few minutes we have, let's just look at the latest protest, where there's just about the 50% increase in the price of gas. Yes, that clearly was the sort of catalyst in that moment in the middle of November. But there's been a long list of grievances building up. If you look at the last few years, it's from the aggrieved pensioners, workers, university students, minorities, women. You have a host of groups of people in this Iranian society that feel the regime no longer at all wants to listen to the grievances. And on this occasion, with the price increase for gas, you had actually the lower classes in society, and particularly around the countryside, the more impoverished parts of the Iranian society that feel they're going to get hit hardest come out first. And that was, in many ways, the biggest surprise to the authorities. And I think that's why they reacted the way they did.
And it would appear that they're leaderless, these people who are coming out onto the streets, and they're spontaneous. It sounds like they're a bit like the Lebanese protests. They're against the whole system. They don't have a list of demands. They're just deeply frustrated.
Exactly. This is the point they've arrived at. It is the question of why even bother asking for reform? Why even bother try and say to your ruling elite that please listen to us? That seems to be the message. You know, you've had protests in Iran since the Islamic Republic took over in 79 periodically. They used to happen every 10 years. The last decade or so, we've had them every two or so years. The last couple of years, they're happening every few months. I mean, the last time we had big protest in Iran was last winter of 2017, early 2018. Now, they're leaderless. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a bad thing. The Iranian state claims they're not leaderless, obviously, as the sort of narrative often is from Tehran. They see a foreign plot, foreign hands behind us. But really, they haven't put any evidence forward to substantiate such claims, which take us back to the angry sentiment.
And what about, you know, their attitudes to the president, Rouhani? Do they, you know, have they got any hope that he can change himself?
You know, President Rouhani, whatever credibility he really had left with anybody who had hoped for reform, gradual reform, that's gone now. He was one of the first ones to come out and say, you know, we have to crack down. He didn't say it in so many words, but he was pretty much behind the very, very violent response. And by the way, the violent response was because of the deep panic inside the regime that if you let people come out, more pockets of society might join them, and then it gets out of control. And that's why you have had, depending on who you listen to, but certainly hundreds of people have been killed and thousands have been arrested. And compared to anything we've seen in recent years, this was far bigger. And the only way we can explain this sort of harsh reaction is the sense of panic inside the Iranian regime. And number two, let's not forget, there is this thing called maximum pressure campaign by the Trump administration, which I'm sure is at the back of the minds of the ruling elite in Tehran, that maybe the United States has some plan that they're executing right now.
Let's just tease that apart. So you do definitely, do you, sense the public mood is different now compared with, say, 2017 or 2009, when thousands turned out to demonstrate against voter fraud?
You know, if we want to make the best comparison in that sense, talking about voter fraud, we have to go back to 2009. If you remember the sort of re-election campaign of the then president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and the Green Opposition Movement, people came out and the main slogan then was, "Where's my vote?" And the argument that the election had been stolen from him. This time around, none of those leaders from the Green Opposition Movement were sort of mentioned by the protesters. The slogans centered on death to Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme leader. Rouhani wasn't a factor. The parliament wasn't a factor. It was straight to Khamenei. He seemed to be really at the heart of Iran's problems. And that, I think...
No wonder they were panicking.
Right, exactly.
Yes, because there's been some quite violent protests against shrines, for instance, in Najaf and other places that, you know, shocked everybody. And look, the allegation that the Americans one way and the other are behind this, I mean, can you see any evidence of this, and do you think it's biting with the public?
I mean, look, I didn't see anybody burning the pictures of President Trump or shouting slogans against the United States or for the United States, for that matter. In other words, the United States was not a factor in this. This is a fight between a people, particularly a younger generation, a demographic that was not even, you know, maybe their fathers weren't even born and mothers weren't even born back in 1979. So we're talking about, a demographic shift in Iranian society. Mm. You have an Ayatollah Khamenei, 80-year-old, who was at the forefront of the revolution in 1979, who has lost touch with his own population. And you have a president in the shape of Rouhani and others before him, by the way, people like Mohammad Khatami in the 1990s, who come through the ranks of the regime, promise gradual change, and everybody wants gradual change, because who on earth wants Syria? Who on earth wants Iraq or Afghanistan and civil war conditions? So they say, okay, give us gradual change then, but nothing ever really happens. And that's why people are mobilizing on this core target being the supreme leader himself.
Now, let's go to that regional pressure, because there are some extraordinary protests against Iranian Shiites in Iraq as well, and some incredible death rates there. And, of course, in Lebanon, mercifully, it hasn't been violent there, really, against Iran's proxy Hezbollah. So is that affecting the way Iran's leaders are reacting? And I might add, is it affecting attitudes within Iran? They sort of say among citizens, you know, come right back to us rather than being involved in the broader region.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, the Iranian consulate was torched on three occasions over the last couple of weeks in Iraq. You know, Najaf is a holy Shia city. It's supposed to be a place where Iranian influence is welcome. Certainly the Iranian influence has been there in strong ways since 2003 with the fall of Saddam Hussein. And the fact that it gets torched by Shia Iraqis, not by Sunni Iraqis, but by Shia Iraqis against Iran, tells you that, listen, we're not against Iran, the nation, but the Islamic Republic and this political model that you're trying to impose on us is not welcome here. It's not about anything other than a system of governance that isn't delivering. And people should remember this. Iraq is much wealthier in terms of oil income than Iran today. So it's not a lack of money that brings people to streets of Baghdad or Sadr City or Basra. It's the way the money is being misspent. It's the way the system, both in Iraq and in Lebanon, are not delivering to their ordinary citizenry. And those people look at the mothership. And where do they have to turn their heads to see the mothership? Well, that's Tehran. That's Ayatollah Khamenei and this Islamic Republic. And I think for the Iranians back in Iran, the question is, what are we doing in the region? To the benefit of who? And if you ask your average Iranians, they'll say, you know what? This is a case of overreach. We have no business being in the Arab world in the way that we are. We should come back and rebuild Iran.
And the trouble is, it's so hard to find people in Iran to ask those questions of. For the media, it really struggles with this. We'd love to hear more from inside Iran. So where do you see this heading?
You know, it's impossible to sort of predict what will happen, because people have been in the business of predicting the demise of the Islamic Republic pretty much since the early days when Ayatollah Khomeini returned to Iran from exile in Paris in January of 1979. So I don't want to get myself into trouble by predicting anything too explicitly here. But the fact is, you have a supreme leader who is 80 years old, who is detached, and who surely in his mind has to think, what will be my legacy? Will they topple me before I die the way we toppled the Shah 40 years ago? Or can I perhaps start thinking of making compromises? Because clearly, I'm way, way apart from my own people, and it's thousands and hundreds of thousands that each time come out in the street. So it's really up to him. I don't think the United States right now is thinking about regime change in Tehran. Even if they wanted to, I'm not sure if they could pull it off. I don't think anybody else in the world can pull it off in terms of changing how Iran is governed. It's a fight for the Iranian people. It's between the small ruling elite and the majority of Iranians that want to live a very different life than they're living right now.
Alex Fatanker, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me.
And Alex Fatanker is a senior fellow at the Middle East Institute and the Jamestown Institute in Washington, D.C.